grab a beverage, settle in. When you're ready, we'll begin. Joe and Pat and Michael, too, are gonna talk comic books with you.
Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast. Join us in our exploration of all things San Diego Comic-Con on this, the Casual Comics Cast,
Comic-Con at Home Edition.
Well, welcome back to the Casual Comics Cast, everybody. Wrapping up our San Diego Comic-Con at Home experience, we've got Michael with me today. Say hi, Michael.
Hi.
Oh, thanks. And we've got Jeff, who is joining us because he actually got in on the fun. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing?
I feel like I did go to the convention because I am tired today. I'm like really tired.
You look tired.
And I got my quarantine haircut. You like that?
Nice.
Oh, man. So today we'll be talking about San Diego Comic-Con and some of the things we saw from the Saturday and Sunday panels. And if you stick around, we have a special interview with a creator, Tom Zoller, creator of Love and Capes, which we reviewed in one of our earlier episodes. Ta-da! You guys seem so excited. Michael, put your phone down.
I'm looking for something comic book related. So
what are you looking for that's comic book related?
Don't worry about it. I'll tell you later.
Oh, I'll tell you later. All right. Well, let's jump into it. So Saturday was a fun day for Comic-Con. I got to see some really interesting things, some oddball things, as well as some really cool things. I think the one thing that I did get to see that I was looking forward to is the trailer for Bill and Ted Face the Music in the panel.
Tell me all about this, please.
Well, Bill and Ted are two high school students.
No.
It was 1986. Or 85 or whatever.
Still a young, fresh-faced guy. And the, you know, we talked about sometimes the panel is it's make or break on who the moderator is. So Kevin Smith was the moderator of the panel. So
I'm sure it was great.
Can't get much better than that.
Yeah. Right. It was really cool. I can't get used to seeing him so thin, though. It's kind of freaking me out.
Yeah. He needed it, though.
I know.
Yeah, that heart attack was a scare.
Yeah, that'll get you every time. But it was a really cool panel. They did show the trailer, which I'm sure most people, if they're interested in it, have seen it online by now. But they had Keanu and Alex on. I haven't seen Alex Winter in like anything since Bill and Ted. Has he been in anything else?
I think he's been mostly behind the camera in the intervening years.
He was in a movie called Freaked that was really weird.
Yes, and Keanu was in that movie too. He was unbilled.
Right. Yes, he played the dog boy, dog face boy, right?
Right. So you had no idea it was him.
So that was actually a lot of fun to get to see those guys again. I'm actually looking forward to the movie. You know, the movie looks like it's set in present day, and Bill and Ted did not fulfill their destiny of being rock stars, and so the world is going to hell, which is very reminiscent of what's actually going on today. So they have to they have to travel through time again and inspire themselves to write the song that they never wrote that was supposed to save the world.
Amazing.
So
that's great.
You know, it's that kind of time travel stuff that I'm sure they went through every possible thing to make sure that the timeline made. No, I'm sure they did not. that was really cool. And you saw a Kevin Smith deal, Michael, or did you not?
Nope.
You did not watch An Evening with Kevin Smith that you said you're so excited for?
I'm going to, but I got busy and I watched three other things, so I felt like I was still ahead of the game, but I'm going to have to go back and watch it.
Saturday I did watch Surviving the Hunger Games, Are the Odds Ever in Your Favor, which was
I'm so glad you watched it, because I wanted to and I didn't get to it. Tell me about it.
It was interesting. It was some college professors, I think there was a professor of literature, professor of psychology. It was mildly interesting, but it was really just them like talking about the books and which one was their favorite book. They didn't.
So there's a new Hunger Games book that just came out.
I didn't talk about that at
all. Okay. Did you read the books?
I did. I saw the first movie. I think my wife wanted to, she was like, we were out on a Saturday afternoon. She's like, let's see something. And she wanted to see that. It was a big movie at the time. And then when we went, I was like, you know, the movie was okay, but it seems like it would have been a good book. And it's one of those where you can tell when you watch the movie that they're like, oh, these things didn't make sense. There's got to be more to it and more behind the scenes. So I was glad I went back and read the book. And then I read probably all three books in over the course of a week.
Really good. Yeah, they're pretty easy reads. Lots of fun.
So which one is your favorite book?
Ooh, that's a good
question.
Probably the first one.
First one?
Yeah, I think
see that. They did talk.
What is the Japanese movie that we watched that was supposed to be very similar to The Hunger Games?
Battle Royale. People accused her of ripping that movie off when she wrote The Hunger Games, and I think you saw the movie, you can see why.
We saw it. Yep, I got it.
So Battle Royale is a movie about Japanese school children who are put on an island to fight each other to the death. Wow.
Sounds very similar.
So that was kind of a cool panel to see. But, you know, that one was really just more for people you don't know, you've never heard of, and just talking about The Hunger Games. So it's kind of like eavesdropping on a conversation between just some people BSing about stuff. I did watch, too, the panel of my favorite comics publisher right now, Ahoy Comics. Ahoy Comics, expect more. Which was really good. Editor-in-Chief Tom Pyre was there. Some of the artists and writers. And I got to hear actually about a couple of comics that I did not know about that I'm very excited to read now. And, you know, because I'm a fan of Billionaire Island, Edgar Allan Poe's Snifter of Terror, Captain Ginger, some of those. They were talking about a comic called Wrong Earth. And I was like, what is this? And it was cool. And it's like there's Dragonfly and Dragonfly Man. They're two different superheroes, but Jeff, you'll get a kick out of this. Like, I don't know which one's which, but like Dragonfly is like a kind of like a 1960s Batman type character. Like, cool. Gee whiz, abides by the comics code and everything. And then Dragonfly Man is from an alternate universe, and he's like the Frank Miller Dark Knight there.
Wow.
And he's like really dark and gritty and grim. And there's a something happens. I haven't read the book yet, but they swap universes and they swap places. So this dark, grim and gritty Batman is like living in 60s world, and Adam West Batman's like in Frank Miller universe,
getting eaten alive.
Right. And so I was like, I gotta read this book. So that's one of the cool things I like about Comic-Con is when you just unexpectedly you come across something you would have never had any idea about before. And I'm super looking forward to it. So we'll have to talk about Wrong Earth on an upcoming podcast. Jeff, you got to watch something, right, Jeff? Was yours a Saturday deal?
I'll be honest with you. I don't know when they appeared on the panel. I kind of took the lazy boy route and watched them on YouTube.
Okay. It's not the lazy boy route. It's the smart route. Well, unless you needed to know, like, instantly what was going on in every panel. You got to be on your own terms with the virtual thing.
It literally was the lazy boy route because I was on my recliner.
Oh.
So what did you wind up checking out, Jeff?
I went in and I watched a little bit of the Batgirls, and I was having a hard time getting into that because I didn't know anything about any of the writers, and they were really just kind of talking about themselves and everything, and which is fine and everything. It just wasn't. You know, there wasn't a lot of meat there about the character of Batgirl, which is what I went in with the expectation of.
Sure. So I mean, the title of the panel is Batgirls.
Yeah. So what that was women who work on Batman comics or Batgirl comics.
Okay.
So, which was fine. I ended up watching what did they call it? It was the Warner Archives Secret Origins of Saturday Morning Cartoons. Ooh. Because that was my entree into the world of comics. I was totally a media kid. I rarely actually touched a comic when I was a small child.
So what did you watch besides Super Friends?
Yeah, pretty much nothing. No, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. You know, whenever there was a Fantastic Four cartoon. Any of that stuff. If it was superheroes, I was totally in. Anything else, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. But the passion was for the superhero shows.
But you could do your Ted Knight Super Friends voice.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice, Batman and Robin sit around and do nothing because none of these stories ever have any real action in them. Oh,
I like when they started bringing out the second tier sugars. Give us your Jeff thumbs up, thumbs down on the Wonder Twins.
In the moment, thumbs way down. Now, as an adult, I'm like, no, okay, I get it. They're fine.
So Michael,
Wendy and Marvin, thumbs way down.
I don't know what the Wonder Twins are. Is this like the Bobbsey Twins?
The Super Friends was a cartoon. Was it late 60s, or early 70s, Jeff?
Early 70s, like 73 is when it started, and it ran in various iterations all the way into the 80s.
Okay, and so... Super Friends, Batman, Robin, Superman, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, the usual suspects. But they had introduced these sidekick characters named the Wonder Twins, Zan and Jaina.
Zan and Jaina, and their monkey Gleek.
And their power, they looked like elvish almost because they had pointy ears. I don't know why. And their powers were they could touch their rings together. And they go, Wonder Twin powers, activate. And she could turn into any animal, and he could turn into any kind of water.
Any kind of water? He anything sure got the short end of that stick.
Yeah. But, you know, he ended up being like an ice slide or, you know, a wave or whatever. And he had a little face whenever he was a wave or a ice slide.
It's ridiculous. A
bucket of water.
Yeah, it was fun.
I heard that they rebooted that as a comic book just in the last few years, and people say it's really good.
Well, it could be. I mean, you know, the cartoon version is just really literally two-dimensional. it's not fleshed out very well. They're there to provide an avatar for the children watching the show. Right. So that's how they relate to what's going on.
Right. So that's the Super Friends. Also, and it was when I was listening to the Ahoy Comics panel, the one guy who's a writer there was writing a critically acclaimed Flintstones comic that I've heard is really worth checking out. So he's talking about how like it's sort of bookending his career with Billionaire Island being the end of the world, and then he started with the Flintstones, which was the dawn of humanity. So
nice. Before we get too far away from the Super Friends, I just wanted to point out that in the Arrowverse Crisis on Infinite Earths, at the very ending, they made a reference to Gleek.
Oh, well, see, that's the Wonder Twins. They're there.
Yeah.
Michael, you don't look impressed. We'll have to watch an episode of
Super Friends. I'm curious about Gleek. I want to know what he does.
He's a little blue monkey. He's blue.
Yeah, okay, I get it.
And he wears
and he sounds like this.
Does he hear anything?
That's what he sounds like.
I don't know if I like it.
That's all he did.
But he's just there. He doesn't have any cool like power.
He has a prehensile tail.
That is a pretty cool power. Well, I don't have a tail, but if I had one, I'd hope it would be a prehensile. So.
What's something that you watched that you liked there, Michael? That you actually liked, since you skipped Kevin Smith?
I did. I know we've talked about this every single day this week. I did watch the Guillermo del Toro and Scott Cooper interview. This was an example of where I actually felt bad for the moderator. Not because the moderator was terrible, but because the two of them just had so much to say and were so good at banter that the moderator didn't get to say really anything. He was just desperate to ask questions, and they were like, no. We have all these things we want to talk about. It's just, you know, butt out. But it looks super creepy, like super, super creepy. I didn't know anything about the series. It's not supposed to come out until, I think, early 2021. So we've got a while, but it's, I guess, going into the Wendigo.
Ooh.
Yeah, super, super spooky. But it was pretty cool. They were talking a lot about filmmaking and sort of something I don't know a lot about, so I thought that was interesting to get their perspective and point of view. I watched the Nosferatu panel.
Yes.
And I'm dying.
Did that just start?
It's already out, yeah. So it's already out on AMC. This is an unfortunate example of my mom not having a channel that I can hijack so I can watch TV shows. But I think it's going to be great. And I didn't know this, but Joe Hill wrote
cable for his business. Then you have a business account that you can all share.
Jeffy's making fun of me because I technically drive a company car still, and I'm in my 30s. But
that's okay, that's all right.
My dad loves me.
Her dad's cell phone plan.
Joe,
that's okay. Podcast.
Anyone can listen to this. Stop outing me. But Joe Hill wrote a graphic novel.
Yeah, don't put this on your resume then.
I'm going to talk about what I want to talk about now. So Joe Hill wrote a graphic novel that was actually about the Wraith, about the car that Charlie Manx drives in Nosferatu. And so I didn't know that, and that's something I think we should check out on a future review of the podcast. But they're talking about a couple new characters, both villains and I think further development of some of the good guys from season one. And if you did not read Nosferatu, it is an incredible book. Like, if you like Stephen King at all, or kind of horror and just like really wildly imaginative storylines, I absolutely loved this book. I cannot give it better ratings. So please check it out.
Nice, nice. The shortest panel I watched was Who's the Best Doctor Who? And first off, I was like mad going into it. I'm mad going into it because nobody calls him Doctor Who. It's the Doctor.
It's the Doctor. Doctor. Yeah.
But these were people who were like way big Doctor Who fans, and they're from Britain, and they were talking about this. I was like, hey, I'll listen to some people debate. I'm always up for listening to people debate about who their favorite Doctor is. They start out, they introduce themselves, and the guy goes, well, our discussion's going to get thrown a little off track because remember how the last season ended when X controversial thing happened? And I'm like, I did not see it yet.
You're like, what
the fuck?
Spoiler alert. Even I know that.
One of the most controversial season endings in Doctor Who history. I'm like, oh, thanks for blowing it, jackass.
Well, look, to be fair, if you're at the panel, they're assuming you've seen everything.
There's things you do, Jeff. You gotta tell people spoiler alert. I went to a panel this week where they were like, "Hey, spoiler! All those movies 10 years old. We don't." I'm like, okay. Maybe it's just British people being jerks. I don't know.
So, but what's the answer? I know everyone.
I shut it off because I was like, "Who else knows what else they're gonna blow?"
So you have no idea who the best Doctor is.
It is.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, I don't care what these people's opinion is. What is your opinion? That's what I'm asking.
Right now, I gotta say the 12th Doctor is the best Doctor. He's pretty fucking awesome.
Which one is the 12th?
Peter Capaldi.
Like, that means nothing to me.
Peter Capaldi was great. If you're gonna go classic Doctor Who, it's definitely John Pertwee. In my mind, the third Doctor.
Not Tom Baker?
No. Not that Tom Baker's bad. John Pertwee is just better. John Pertwee does like old man kung fu on people.
I like that idea.
And you'll have to look. I'm not like super into the details, Jeff. You should go read up. Like, watch an episode or two of John Pertwee and read it. He was like, I think, British Secret Service. And for like,
really?
Even while he was on the show, what he did for the British Secret Service was still classified. He wasn't allowed to discuss it.
Wow.
And he's like this international man of mystery. He's on Doctor Who.
I've seen maybe 3 hours of Doctor Who total in my entire life.
And
I'm with you, Jeff.
And most of that was the really bad American TV movie.
Well, there's only one. That's it. Although Paul McGann, that's the 8th Doctor. That movie is really bad, Jeff. You would be really impressed. Go listen to some of the audio dramas. He's like one of the longest running doctors because he's been doing audio dramas for like years.
And really?
They were just like, all right, well, this TV show didn't work. What are we going to do? Right into the audio dramas, and they're like super highly acclaimed. And he's a really great like voice actor. You can really tell.
Excellent.
So there's something else. And then on the British front, I also watched the Red Dwarf, The Promised Land panel. So there's a there's a new Red Dwarf movie coming out. I think it actually might be out now as we speak. And they had the most of the cast. They had Craig Charles. That's his name, right?
Sure.
Sounds good.
I forget his name.
I don't know.
Oh, it was really good though. I mean, that's a TV show that I didn't realize, Michael. That TV show debuted 33 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what we're even talking about.
It's a British TV show called Red Dwarf, and it's a science fiction comedy about a guy who gets stranded in outer space and is probably the last human alive. He's on a spaceship, and there is a radioactive leak, and he happens to be in stasis as a punishment because he smuggled a cat on board.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, wait, it gets better.
He smuggled a cat on board in order to, you know, impress a girl or whatever like that. They find out that he smuggled a cat on board, and so they put him in a stasis chamber. There's a radioactive leak. Everybody else on the ship dies, and the computer doesn't release him from the stasis chamber until enough of the radiation is gone that it won't be harmful to him, which is like a million years.
Did they put the cat in stasis also? Or
no. It turns out the cat was pregnant, and the cat had a litter, and now there's one other living being on the ship, which is a creature that looks almost just like a human, except it's descended from this cat. like the cats, and while he was asleep for a million years, like these cats created their own whole civilization, and they all got smart enough that they built like another rocket ship and were able to leave and left.
I mean,
and then this
you
was
are
the
one. You got me hooked. I'm in. That's all you had to say.
And he's called.
I think that it highlights the intelligence of cats, which I believe in.
I'm with you.
The reason that they left him behind is because he's the dumbest one of them all, and they didn't want him around. And literally, it's so funny because he's called Cat. That's his only name, Cat. Mm-hmm. And he walks around, and he's got a little spray bottle, and he'll spray water on stuff, and he'll be like, "That's mine. That's mine. That's mine." So he claims ownership of anything is by spraying it.
Oh my gosh. Well, I was thinking about, you know, like people spray their dogs. Like, I thought you were going to say he has a little water bottle that he, like, just when someone is pissing him off, he just walks around and sprays the people that are ticking him off as punishment.
Nope. So that's actually, you should check out the show. It's pretty good. The old ones, you know, they really show their age. But I'm excited that they've got a new movie. They made a movie. It's coming out on BritBox. Yeah, July 26th. So it just came out yesterday.
Cool.
Well, let's actually pause here for a second. We're going to have a chat with Tom Zoller, creator of Loving Capes. And then we will come back after that and wrap up our discussion of Comic-Con and maybe plan for our next show.
Meanwhile, in the interview hall of the Casual Comics Cast.
We're joined by Tom Zoller, who is also a local Ohio resident here. Where are you at in Ohio, Tom?
I'm in Timberlake, Ohio. I'm about 20 minutes east of Cleveland, the far eastern northern corner.
Okay, well,
very cool.
I'm in Columbus right now, and Michael's up in Sandusky.
See, people love Sandusky, Joe. You rag on it, but people love Sandusky.
That long, long time ago, I used to work doing caricatures at Geauga.
Oh, gosh. Okay, I used to work for a company that did caricatures at Cedar Point. So
Comic shops, yeah, it was the same company because I almost moved to work at Cedar Point at one time. I mean, like I would have been able to, but I didn't like giving up all my summer.
I get it. I actually did the old time photo for Commons Art Shops, so you were cooler than I was. I wanted to be one of the caricature people, but I did not have the talent. So they put me behind the camera and made me dress people up in old timey capes and hats. So
one of my good friends worked for that part of it.
Very cool. Very cool. Joe, you're the odd man out now. Yeah. Hmm.
I thought everybody knew each other in Nebraska, and I'd get away from that here in Ohio. So, Tom, you probably don't remember me. I remember you. I met you at Comic-Con probably 8 years ago, maybe a little longer. It was right about when Love and Capes first came out in its first trade paperback, and I was wandering the exhibit hall and just ran into your booth randomly and stopped and chatted, and you filled me in on this great comic you had called Love and Capes which we've talked about on the podcast. I reread my trade paperback, the first one, which you graciously signed for me, and Michael, by mistake, read, I think, the third one.
That's because of your poor direction, Joe. But I read the What to Expect, and then I've read a little bit of the newer ones too that Joe has passed over. So
yeah, What to Expect is the fourth one.
It was an odd entry, maybe, to it, because Joe recommended we read it, and I was like, "This is an interesting first issue for me to read." But okay, I'm there.
So for our listeners, would you mind filling them in a little bit on the plot of Love and Capes and how you came to these characters who are just so lovable?
Sure. Well, thank you for calling them lovable. Love and Capes is a superhero romantic comedy. It's about a superhero who says, "I love my girlfriend. I'm going to tell her that. But if I tell her that, I have to tell her everything. So is there ever a good time to tell your girlfriend you have X-ray vision? What does she want for Christmas when she knows you can crush coal into diamonds?" Things like that. It came about because I was doing a book that nobody had heard of called Raider, and there was a Batman Catwoman relationship in it, and I found I really liked writing the banter, and I just wanted to do something short and an individual issue, not a big graphic novel. So I did the first issue of Love and Capes. That went really well, and then after that my rule was, if I do two, I'll do six. Everyone was built to be essentially a season. So the first one is their dating year. The second is their engagement. The third is their newlywed. The fourth, Abby's pregnant.
That's great. It's a great story. It seems like it's suited for a sitcom, right? Have you mm-hmm. had any expressed interest in that kind of thing, moving to a different platform?
Yeah, I've had some now and then. Nothing recently, which is why I'm hoping that the new volume that's coming out will spike that again. It's designed to be a sitcom because it very much has that sitcom sensibility of the characters have jobs, but you don't really see them work. You see them before and after work, but that's why most of the superhero stuff is Darkblade and Crusader hanging out drinking coffee. Because my feeling was, if you want to read actual superhero stuff, DC and Marvel publish 1 billion books a year that do that. But if you want to read a comic book about people in a healthy relationship, they are not doing that. So it's an open space to play with.
Great.
Very cool.
You look like you had a question there, Michael.
I did have a question. So yeah. I'm curious, as I think about storytelling, right, we give of ourselves when we storytell and really reveal our sort of hopes and fears and all of that. And I'm sure the same is for yourself. But are any of these characters based on people in your real life or inspired by?
No. Individual stories are, but not the characters themselves. Okay. There's a bit where Darkblade and Charlotte are talking about how Mark and Abby banter back and forth and they think it's cute when other people watch, and that's based on friends of mine. There are things from, other friends' relationships, my relationships, that I kind of pick and choose, but no one in Love and Capes is actually based on any one person.
Okay. While you're sort of picking from these experiences and other relationships that, are in your life, do you ever get yourself in trouble when you are storytelling that you say something and someone says, "Yeah, that's definitely based on something that you saw happen in my life"?
Yeah, it's probably happened once or twice. Not too much, and I try not to do it. I try to either obfuscate it or I try, because you want to make it the thing for the story. You don't want it to make it the thing that actually happened. And then on top of that, I try to make sure it's a good thing. I'm not taking shots. So, sure. Yeah, one of the things I stole in Love and Capes, and this came from my friend Mike, who actually helps edit the book. He's one of my trusted readers on it. But when his wife was pregnant, she had problems with the prenatal vitamins. So that whole bit about Abby needing to take chewable vitamins instead of that was all from his world. Colleen helped me through a lot of that because I don't have kids. So it was all kind of science fiction. But I read What to Expect When You're Expecting and The Girlfriend's Guide to Getting Pregnant and everything. So I could do my research for the book.
I love that you read that as someone who doesn't have children. I love it.
So what is the new project that you've got coming up, and what's the timing on that look like?
So the new one is called Love and Capes, The Family Way. It was delayed for a bunch of reasons, including there was a pandemic thing.
Oh,
but it, it takes place 5 years after the last issue. I always said I wouldn't not come back to Love and Capes, but I wanted to have the right story. Like, I didn't want to just keep going. And I became very worried. And this is a weird thing that I'm concerned about. Maybe it's because I watch TV shows on Fox every once in a while. But I don't want to leave people hanging with the story if I can help it. I want to make sure that everything ends. So every Love and Capes volume was always designed so that if that was the last one I did, it would be okay. Like, I might want to do more, but the readers wouldn't be wondering what happened and, how could this, what happens next? I want them to wonder, but I don't want it to be this giant cliffhanger ending. So I didn't know how to come back to it. Like, I wasn't adverse to the idea, but I hadn't figured out how to do it. And then I happened to be friends with Greg Weisman, who does Young Justice. And he's a fan of Love and Capes, which blows my mind on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And he called me over and he's like, "Oh, I got a question for you. I'm thinking it's going to be something deep and dark." And, and he's like, are you ever coming back to Love and Capes? I'm like, "Man, Greg, I would, but I don't know what to do." He's like, "I got an idea." I'm like, "Oh, yeah. All right, Mr. Young Justice, you tell me your idea." And he said, "Jump at 5 years and they have two kids." I'm like, "Oh, crap, that solves all my problems." Because part of it was that I didn't want to follow the arc of the child, because that's signing up for 18 years.
Right.
And I don't know that I have that much material in me for it. But jumping ahead 5 years gave me the ability, and having them have two kids is I can pick and choose from whatever kid type stories I want to play with, because I have them at two different ages. And it was a nice bump to get past some of the rote stories, right, and like the obvious ones, and just get to be able to cherry pick and do the stuff exactly that I want to do.
That's tremendous. That's awesome. I'm really looking forward to checking that out. One of the things too, you and I met at Comic-Con, and I read something online that you've been to Comic-Con, is it 20 times? 20 years now?
Oh my gosh.
25 years.
Oh my gosh, that's so many times. So, Tom, yeah. I'm devastated. This was going to be my big year, and I have never been to Comic-Con.
Another friend of mine is in the same situation, and I feel like, do you remember, what was it, 2008, where Time Magazine said that you were the person of the year? It was like, it was about the internet, and they had like a reflective cover. I feel like this is the year that everybody went to Comic-Con.
Yeah, are you following along on it with any of the online panels?
I've watched one that some of my friends are on, and I've done a couple of the hangouts. My Comic-Con is so huge, and it's different for everybody who's in it, that the parts of Comic-Con that are for me are not online. So right. I'm not hanging out at the Writers Guild Animation Party trying to get work. Yeah. And mostly I'd just be at my booth eating Pop-Tarts trying to sell comic books. Because they maintain, and sometimes you really need that sugar hit. And that is far less able to be done. So I've been going to Comic-Con long enough where I would go and I would go to a panel and see things and then come back home to Ohio and tell my friends. And it was like C-3PO telling the Ewoks what happened in the first two movies. And now they find out what happens before I do, because they're on Twitter and Facebook, and half the panels are posted and the trailers are posted, and they know everything that happens before I do. So like, I don't have this burning desire to watch panels, because the way that I've absorbed panels for the last 10 years is just waiting for people to post about it later anyway. Right. But I'm glad they're doing it. I think they've got some places they could certainly make improvements, but it's, this is nobody's first choice, and I like that they're keeping on.
I agree. I think that, to me, that's one of the key things. I'm having fun doing it, and this is Michael's first time, even being exposed to any of this Comic-Con stuff. But it's funny, because I hear people, they'll ask some of the panels. They'll be like, what was your experience at Comic-Con? And what do you? And I think it was Gennady Turk. I can never pronounce his name. The creator of Samurai Jack.
Sure, yeah.
And he said the one thing that he wouldn't miss was the crowds. And he's like, too many people, too hard to get through stuff. And that is the one piece that I think, for me, makes the Comic-Con experience, is meeting people you would have never met before, bumping into just random things that you would have never been exposed to had you not just shown up and had somebody who, through the kindness of and the passion of their fandom, exposed you to something you would have never even thought. And I mean, that's the perfect example is Love and Capes. It's nothing that I ever ran across my local comic book shop. It's nothing that was sitting on the shelf of Barnes and Noble when I or Borders back in the day. But I just happened to right place, right time, wandered by your booth. Mm-hmm. You look bored, like maybe you hadn't had a Pop-Tart in a bit. And it just caught my eye, and I was like, this is actually really cool, and I've just been a fan of it ever since.
Yeah, I miss the discoverability, and I miss all the parts of the crowds except some of the parts of the crowds. Like, right. I don't mind not waiting in line to get coffee or to eat the breakfast at the embassy. My girlfriend and I had pizza, like a pizza party with some people, because we normally do that at Comic-Con. And when I was making it, I was joking like, okay, well, so this will be ready 45 minutes later than you think. You're going to have to wait outside before it's ready. And also, the room costs $250 a night right now.
Right.
Exactly. I was trying to get the whole Comic-Con experience, but that did not go over the way that I had hoped.
Well, maybe you can provide some recommendations, because I'm trying to create the virtual Comic-Con experience for Michael. And one of the things that I told her she's got to do is sit down cross-legged on a hard floor and eat a pretzel dog.
That's true. Yeah,
that pretzel dog guy is there every year.
Sleep 2 to 3 hours a night. That's one. Drink too much. That's one of my regular things.
I got that one covered.
Excellent. a lot of it because like I've hit the point as an exhibitor where I don't like I get into the things that I need to because I have exhibitor access. I don't get to see panels or anything, but I don't have to wait to get on the show floor. But yeah, waiting in line, that's the big thing. Being with a bunch of people standing still, not moving, that's a lot of the experience. And if you take all the stuff that you want to see and put a bunch of action figures in front of it so you can't see all of it, that might be the way. I mean, I'm 6'4". I don't have that problem. But other people, I'm told, yes.
I'm 5'4", so I think I might be in a different boat than you.
And if you have someone stop intermittently in front of you and take photos, that happens a lot, too.
Right. Or people with a baby stroller but obviously no children. just wandering around bumping into people with a baby stroller that's full of action mm-hmm. figures and
comic
swag.
Books. Yeah. Well, they traded the baby for the swag, so
it's one way to get it.
No, I really can't wait to get back in person. What's some of your when I've gone, the coolest things is when you randomly run into somebody you didn't expect to see. Have you had any of those random celebrity encounters?
Oh yeah. I ran in and talked to Colin Ferguson from Eureka for like a way huge amount of time. And I've talked to Phil Lamar once or twice at shows. I got to see, this one was cool for me. I got to see Dietrich Bader, who was the voice of Batman on Brave and the Bold. And he is the voice of Kraven on Ultimate Spider-Man. And I wrote an episode of Ultimate Spider-Man that he was in.
Cool.
So it was the first person from that episode that I got to meet. I also, I think that same year, maybe the next year, I met Fred Tascator, who is the voice of the Hulk on Spider-Man. So he, you know, it's just weird when you run into people who read lines that you wrote, because I haven't had that happen in any aspect of that all that often. The big one, my first year at having a booth in 2000. I think it was 2002. Mark Hamill came by the booth.
Oh wow!
And he had me draw some stuff for his comic book, The Movie. And it was just cool because he was big on Batman, but he hadn't had like the Star Trek Renaissance yet, or Star Wars Renaissance yet. Star Wars Renaissance yet. Sorry, Star Trek's my jam. he hadn't had the Star Wars Renaissance yet, so it was still like that level of approachability, and it was just, you know. When he walks up, he's like, I really like your stuff. I'm like, I too am a fan of your work, sir.
that's hilarious. So you're a Star Trek fan, huh? Which is your favorite series?
So I split it into two because I think you can't compare the original series to anything modern just because storytelling's so different.
Right.
But Star Trek Classic is my main thing, but Deep Space Nine is my favorite of the modern stuff.
Yep, there's another podcast hosted by friends of mine in Omaha that's much bigger, much more successful, and much more professional than this one. I think they were nominated for an Eisner Award at one point, and they just I think on their last podcast they talked about there's a DS9 comic book that's coming out that they raved about, and then they had a caller calling because they do a live show and expressed real displeasure at the ending of the Enterprise series. Did you watch the Enterprise series?
It did end horribly, yes.
They kept saying it ended horribly. They're like, you really, really need to watch it, but do not watch the last episode, no matter what.
You can... So I never tell people not to watch stuff. I just want them to know what they're in for. So this is so I don't, I'm trying to think, I might know one or two people who have written for Star Trek, but this is my theory about what happened with the modern Star Treks, the ones from the, you know, Next Gen to Enterprise, is that it was the same team generally writing it. Mm-hmm. So they started breathing their own air. Like, they kept telling stories in the same way. Deep Space Nine kind of went off on this tangent where it was like Alan Moore writing Swamp Thing. They could get away with anything because nobody was paying attention.
Right.
And it became like this super dark, awesome version of Star Trek that you hadn't seen before. But Voyager was very much like Next Gen, and Enterprise was very much like Next Gen for a while. They tried a bunch of stuff, but then everybody who worked on it left in the last season. And Manny Cotto took over. And suddenly he's looking around going, this doesn't feel like Star Trek. Let's start fixing this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, they actually come up with a reason why the Klingons look different in the original series.
Okay.
And I never thought that would work, and it totally did. But then the people who ran the Star Trek show come back for the very last episode, and they do it all as a holodeck episode that Riker is watching.
Okay.
And so you take the show that's about these people, and then you make it all subservient to, you know, the Pegasus episode of Next Gen, and that doesn't feel... So the episode before it is a brilliant finale, and then there's, like, one more episode.
Okay. Well, I'm fairly and duly warned. I don't necessarily... That sounds like an oddball way to end the series.
Yeah, but the last season of Enterprise, if that had been the second season, it would have gone 7 years. It was that good. Oh, like, I was totally on board once that happened.
And
it's amazing how fast it happened.
Yeah. Are you a fan of... I have not watched Picard yet. Are you a fan of Picard?
I loved Picard. It's got a couple little creaky parts in it, but I got to meet Patrick Stewart last year. That was awesome.
Wow.
Because I've written for the Star Trek comic book. I wrote a Deep Space Nine Worf Dax story for IDW, and friends of mine mentioned this to the security guy at the Star Trek booth so that I could do the little transporter thing that they had, which was cool. Yeah. And then he walks by my booth the next day and he's like, well, you know what's happening tomorrow, right? And I'm like, no. He says, well, Patrick Stewart's coming by. I'm like, oh, that's cool. He's like, you should come by. We'll take care of you. I'm like, I don't know what that means, but I will be there to find out.
But I will let you. Yes. Thank you very much, kind sir.
Yeah. So we got to hop the line. And the thing is, I have been preparing to meet Patrick Stewart for about 15, 20 years now. Because I went to the Kubert School in New Jersey and I have friends out there. So we would go to see stuff on Broadway every once in a while. I've seen Patrick Stewart live a couple times. And there's this moment where it's not that you think you're going to run into Patrick Stewart, but you realize that you're both on the same island. So your chances have just gone up geometrically.
Right.
So you're like, what do you say? So I got to say, you know, I love your work. I've seen you on Broadway and I loved you in L.A. story. And he said, bye. That was quite some time ago. And they're like, that's all I needed. I'm done.
I had my moment.
That's amazing. That's great. So what, you know, it sounds like you've done, you know, aside from yourself, you know, creator owned stuff, you've been working for a lot of other. What advice would you have for people who are like looking to get into writing comic books?
So my big advice with comic books being as weird as they particularly are right now is don't put all your eggs in anyone else's basket. So I write my stuff. I write for the My Little Pony comic. I've done animation. I've tried to write Star Trek. Try to keep yourself as diverse as possible. I mean, I feel like the work I do all has a through line in it, and there's a consistency. But also, like, don't just, if my world was based on My Little Pony comics, I'd be in trouble. If my world was based on comic book conventions right now, like, things are not awesome as far as work goes.
Yeah.
But if there are lots of creators who most of their money comes from making conventions, and I don't like having any one thing that if it disappeared, you know, I would be in dire straits. It comes from when I worked at an advertising agency, we had one client who was like 70-80% of our business.
Right.
And then the guy sold the car dealership, and then suddenly our company lost 70% of our revenue. And I'm like, you can't do this. You either have to own everything you're doing, or you have to, you know, be jumping around from place to place so that, you know, you've got some control about what's happening. Cause ultimately my job's not writing or drawing. My job's being employed.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's great. So again, sort of, you know, we discussed a little bit the premise of our podcast. I'm a longtime comics fan. Michael's relatively new. What should she be reading? Like if you gave her a homework assignment to pick up something and say, you got to read this and understand this, what would you recommend?
Let's see. I like Grant Morrison's All-Star Superman. I like that a lot. I like Strangers in Paradise. I like Mark Waid's Flash Run, especially the first couple of years of it. Because I tend to, oh my goodness, Darwin Cook's New Frontier. It is legitimately one of my favorite books of all time.
We haven't talked about any of these yet, Joe. Okay. So I've got a lot of homework to do.
Well, there's
a list.
I did mention to you that Terry Moore was having a panel. So he's the creator of Strangers in Paradise. We talked a little bit about him, but those are some good suggestions. We'll run through those because those are definitely some high points. And we have not talked about The Flash yet. And I'm sure your friend Ryan, who is on with us occasionally, would have a lot to say about DC mm-hmm. New Frontier.
Yeah, sure. I love Darwin Cook's work.
Awesome. Very cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Tom. Is there any place people can go to check out and keep track of when your new book is coming out and or any other projects you're working on?
Sure. Well, the new book comes out in September. You can find me at Tom Zahler, TomZahler on Twitter and Instagram. And you can find me over at Webtoon, where I do Cupid's Arrows and Warning Label.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your at-home Comic-Con experience to chat
pleasure.
With us today. And we look forward to when we'll definitely review the new book when it comes out and shoot you a note.
All right. Thanks.
Meanwhile, back in the studio.
And we're back. Thanks for joining us, Tom. That was a really great interview. We got to spend some lovely time with our fellow Ohioan.
Yes, and we used to work at the same company, not in the same place. So I'm pretty sure, Joe, that you're the, like I said, odd man out for once.
I am. I did not ever work at a souvenir gift shop in Sandusky, Ohio.
It's an art shop. Thank you. Art shop.
So yeah, let's wrap up talking about Comic-Con and then talk about what's next. So Jeff, I think did you say you got to sneak into another panel there?
I did. I went to the wonderful, horrible world of EC Comics.
Tell Michael what EC Comics is.
Yeah, what is that?
EC Comics was created by Max Gaines way back a long time ago. It was originally called Educational Comics. It became Entertaining Comics, and it's eventually the house that spawned Mad Magazine.
Mm, cool.
But before that, they were Tales from the Crypt and all kinds of other stuff like that.
Man, I need. Okay, so Joe teased that you could do an amazing Crypt Keeper, and I need to hear it. I need to hear.
Didn't I do one for the podcast earlier?
I think you did. Michael doesn't listen to our podcast. He just downloads it.
Sometimes I do.
Michael, come on. I listened to three today at work.
You're trying to get caught up. You got to be up on the times.
Oh, and by the way, I can't believe you didn't know anything about Joe's movie career.
Oh, my gosh. Right. You think you know somebody, and then suddenly you find out they got an IMDb page, and they wrote a movie called Bro, What Happened? Is that what it's called?
That was so... You know what? That wasn't even the original title.
What was it?
Well, Anthony, when he asked me to write it, said, I just want a movie, and the working title was What Happened. And then when it came out, it's called Bro, What Happened. I'm like, that's the only title worse than What Happened. Oh, boy.
I've got to find that movie somewhere.
I have a copy on DVD.
Do you?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's worth exactly what I paid for it.
We need to have a party.
At your backyard projection screen.
Yeah. Let's do it.
All right, Jeff. So EC Comics, I didn't know it was Education Comics, and then all of a sudden, Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah. Max Gaines was with National, which became DC, all the way back at the very beginning when, you know, like Action Comics 1 was coming out. And they had a parting of ways, and he left and formed his own comic company. He only took some limited IP with him and started creating, you know, mostly kiddie comics, you know, stuff for small children. And at one point he had a really tragic boat accident and died and left the company, Yeah, awful. But he left it to his 20-something son, Bill Gaines. Bill Gaines is famous as the publisher of Mad Magazine all the way up until God knows when. Education Comics became Entertaining Comics under Bill's rule, and he gathered a bunch of really cool artists and writers, and they started, you know, experimenting with the form and doing really cool, interesting things like Tales from the Crypt and Weird Science and Weird Fantasy and Two-Fisted Tales and stuff like that. Horror, war, all kinds of different things.
Two-Fisted Tales.
Yeah, that was their war title.
Yeah. Have you ever read an issue of Tales from the Crypt, Michael?
No.
They're all...
But I watched it as a child on the television, which is probably something I should not have been allowed to do as a child. But
what's the creepiest one you remember seeing?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. There was one where there was like this big, fat, nasty man, and his wife was trying to get away from him. And it was like an if I can't have you, no one can kind of episode. I don't know why I remember that one, but I do.
What about you, Jeff?
I think I remember Jeffrey Tambor as a demented Santa Claus.
I don't remember that one. The one that's stuck with me all these years is the one Don Rickles, where he's a ventriloquist. Have you seen that
one? Oh, yeah.
I remember that one.
It's like just a deformed twin that's attached to his arm that he dresses up like a ventriloquist doll. It's creepy. It freaked me out.
That's awesome.
I love it. I love that show. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll read a comic or two, Michael, but I mean, they all had the same sensibility as the TV show. And I also am probably the only person that I know that was a huge fan of the Tales from the Crypt movie. The first one, not the second one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Tales from the Crypt Demon Knight.
I never actually saw that one.
Ooh, I like it. It's got Billy Zane in it, I think.
Billy Zane?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, it's no Bordello of Blood starring Dennis Miller.
An even better choice. Who am I to judge?
So is it just like sort of an oral history of EC Comics?
Kind of, yeah. That's pretty much all there was to it. They went and they talked about see, Michael, look. I take notes, too.
Are those typed?
I typed them up. I did.
Oh, my gosh. You're such a professional. You put me to shame.
I'm just a super nerd. What can I say? Let's see here. Oh, yeah. The whole thing with EC Comics, and that really ties into comics as a whole, is that they are largely responsible for the Comics Code coming into being. Frederick Wortham's Seduction of the Innocent, which was this essay book about how comic books were contributing to juvenile delinquency, really got public sentiment going, and they had like magazine burnings and all kinds of crazy stuff, and they were eventually kind of forced to give up all of those cool titles that they were doing.
So when was that about in time? Like what year? Or
1956-ish?
Okay.
Somewhere around there. That was when Bill Gaines went and testified before Congress about comic books. And one of the comic books that they pulled out as an example was the cover of Crime Suspense Stories number 22. And it featured someone holding a severed head and a knife with a body laying below.
That sounds great.
Yeah, I mean, these were really, really out there for the... but anyway, that was one of the major contributors to the Comics Code Authority coming along, which existed for years and years and years afterwards.
It's pretty interesting.
What else did you check out there, Michael?
I checked out one last thing, and I don't know that it was the note I intended to go out on, but it happened. I watched the Brownies panel.
Brownies or Brownies?
Brownies. I wish it was Brownies. I would have liked that better, I think. No, I'm teasing. It started off a little awkward. It felt like maybe people who hadn't been on panels before, so there was some stumbling. But it was a group of people who were all involved in sort of this My Little Pony fandom universe in different capacities, and they're just talking about what that fandom looks like. And, you know, I think it was interesting to me for several reasons. Nobody had pink hair. I thought somebody was going to have pink hair. I don't know why in my mind somebody was going to be like having like glitter all over their body and pink hair, but they all looked like normal people, and which is maybe not the right way to say that. But they talked all about, like, you know, one of the guy, I'm going to quote this guy. He said, "You come for the ponies and you stay for the friendships." That, like, like they just are talking about how being in a fandom, it's
that
not
is
just
so sweet.
It really, actually, really was sweet.
Friendship
but,
is magic. They were well, right.
But they actually talked about, like, I've never heard the word fandom used so much in, like, the short period of time I watched this, but they were talking about, you know, the different fandoms and sort of how they have a kind of a cycle, and, like, depending on when you came into the fandom, you might have judgments of people who are newer to the fandom, and, like, they kind of ebb and flow, and I don't think I'm part of any fandoms that I know of, but another thing was that this one guy, he's like a part-time Navy guy, and he was talking about how he has like a whole like subgroup of military people that are also My Little Pony or Brony fans. And I just, in my mind, it's like, there's so many things out in the universe I don't know exist, but there's something for everybody, and you seek out your people and, you know, pursue what you love. So I could appreciate that. I don't know that I will ever join the Brony club. And one of these people was a chick too, so you don't have to be a bro, just so you know. If you guys are interested, you can be a chick and be a brony too, apparently. Well, not for me, but I can appreciate it. So
I got to hear also a couple different panels from different podcasters, which I thought was really interesting, because I think it convinces me more and more that we could actually do this thing and go have our own panel at Comic-Con. They were wildly varying quality. I'm not going to call out anybody, because I don't think it's cool to, you know, everybody's doing their podcasts, doing their own thing. I think the ones that were good were the ones that where the people were friendly and engaging, but weren't like super friend.
Meanwhile,
but it was like there was somewhere, it was like the people they were telling, it was like they were just hanging around, and like every joke was an inside joke that I'm like, I can see that's funny to you guys because you've been doing podcasts together for like years and years, but I'm not following what you're trying to talk about. The one that was pretty good was called Unnecessary Debates, which I found to be interesting. I have not gotten to watch all of it yet, but it is definitely on my list to finish. And I'm trying to find the name of the podcast these people do, but they just had a bunch of people on, and they were having unnecessary debates. Somebody had prepared some topics and said, we're going to discuss these, and you're going to debate, and who, and they named a winner each time. Let's see. Maybe they don't have their own podcast. I don't know. They were pretty funny. Their debate was, if you took, do you guys know the movie John Wick?
Yes.
I know of it, but I haven't seen it.
If you took the character of Keanu Reeves and recast him using one of the Muppets, which Muppet would be the best John Wick?
Ooh, that's a pretty fun debate.
Floyd. Definitely Floyd.
I enjoyed it. They had to provide their rationale, too, because it was a debate. I liked the guy who suggested Fozzie, because Fozzie already has his own tie. But I think the most compelling argument for who would make a good assassin was the person who argued for Miss Piggy.
Yeah, she's got what it takes.
Her stalking skills, her martial arts prowess.
Oh, the martial arts, come on.
You'd never suspect her.
They said if you're throwing and hosting a kid's birthday party and you could hire three superheroes to be the entertainment of the party, who should you hire?
Deadpool. Actually,
might be a little too adult for a kid's birthday party.
Depends on who the parents are.
So it was those kind of silly questions, and then like the people had come prepared with their answers. I thought that was really funny, and I'm glad I got to see it. But I'm pretty convinced, having heard some of these, Michael, that we there's a spot for us on San Diego 2021 yes. Comic Con panels. Jeff, you too, buddy.
You ready? Well, we'll see.
All right. So, did anybody else watch anything else they want to talk about before we wrap up?
I didn't watch anything else, but I did participate in Dan Davis's Indiegogo crowdfunding.
Yeah, don't forget, people, yeah. Check out Dan Davis's Indiegogo. Michael, I'm sending you. I told you I bought a souvenir yesterday that I was so proud of, and so I
can't wait to see it.
I just texted it to you. So take a look at this. This is like my most proud.
Oh my gosh! Find. It's the Cheddar Goblin. You did that. Oh my god!
I'll see if I can copy this and send it to you, Jeff.
Oh, it's a puzzle.
It's a jigsaw puzzle, and it recreates that's the so box cool. of mac and cheese from the movie. Have you that's seen the movie neat. Mandy, Jeff?
I've never even heard of that
oh,
movie.
Oh man, it is not even really a movie. It's a roller coaster experience. Yeah. You'll have a physical reaction to it. It stars Nicolas Cage doing possibly the most Nicolas Cage things he's ever done in his life. There is a scene where he power chugs an entire bottle of vodka while screaming in horror. It's kind of a horror movie. But randomly in the movie, there's this TV commercial that comes on for the Cheddar Goblin mac and cheese. And in the commercial, this Cheddar Goblin is just vomiting mac and cheese all over kids. And they're like, yay!
Yay! They're eating it. Oh, really, really goofy.
Oh, did Peter Jackson make that commercial?
I don't know. It's golly. I think you can probably find the clip on YouTube going and watching the Cheddar Goblin scene from Mandy. It's an amazing recreation. It's a pretty amazing movie. I'm glad I watched it.
I'm sorry, but that Cheddar Goblin is frightening.
He is terrifying, and if you think that's terrifying, the movie is also similarly terrifying. I'm glad I watched it.
There's a picture of him vomiting.
There's actually a really good oral history of the creation of the Cheddar Goblin online, mm-hmm. because they talked about how they were hooking up the hoses, and they had to be very when they first tried to put the mac and cheese through it, the mac and cheese kept clogging it up, and they had to do different things. They had to really
find anticoagulants to make sure that the cheddar, the mac and cheese wasn't stuck.
Right.
Yuck.
So that's a great movie. That's my finest find, and people can find that at mondotees.com. It is the Cheddar Goblin 252-piece mac and cheese puzzle. And the box is a literal recreation of the box from the movie we all know and love. I did get to get a couple commissions. I'm very excited. I'll share those out when the artists have completed the commissions. And bought a couple posters and a t-shirt. So
very cool.
Got it all done.
Nice.
I failed at my mission to eat a pretzel dog. We talked about it for 5 days in a row, and I didn't do it.
I did not eat a pretzel dog, but I did eat a hot dog while that watching count. A panel that I just put some cheddar cheese on top of.
Yeah, good enough.
Just shredded cheese. It was good. It was my sad attempt to recreate Skyline at home. But yeah, I had a great time Comic-Con virtual this year. I think one of the things on your radar, Michael, Umbrella Academy Season 2, I think, is out on Netflix. Did you finish Season 1?
Yeah.
Are you going to watch Season 2?
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that. Jeff, anything you want to talk about? We actually got a recommendation from Tom Zoller, which you have not heard the interview. You will hear it when you listen to this podcast. We asked him what we should be reading, and he suggested the Mark Waid recent run on Flash. So maybe
nice.
Maybe we'll talk some Flash with you, Jeff.
Maybe.
Somebody told me the TV series got bad, then is really good again now.
It kind of hit a bit of a lull where it gets a little bit tired, but I'm really upset that COVID happened because they were really on track for a really great season finale that they had to cut short. So I'm hoping they'll pick it up with the next season and finish it off.
That would be great. So we would love to have you back on to talk about Flash, and you can maybe you can suggest one or two old Flash comics we can read, and we'll read some old Flash and some new Flash. Get back in the groove of that, Michael. What else? Anything else that you guys saw that is coming up?
At least Warrior Nun.
Warrior Nun.
I already finished it.
You did? And?
Yes.
Quick review, thumbs nope. up, thumbs I down? Will,
nope. Let's talk about it on its own podcast.
And I finally realized there's no catching up for me on Walking Dead after seeing some of the Walking Dead panels here. That's
you're
done.
You're just over it. You're done.
I can't anymore with that show.
It's okay.
But they're not going to get me back in.
Everybody hits their breaking point. So.
All right. Well, very excited. We've got some cool things to catch up on soon here. What are you drinking there, Michael?
I'm drinking the coconut guava jelly donut from Platform.
Nice. Can you give legit. It a review?
I love it. It's got just a really subtle coconut flavor, 5.5% alcohol. I'm a fan.
That's not a review. That's just a description.
I said I'm a fan. That sounds like a review to me. I'm a really big fan.
That's the lazy.
Nine out of 10.
That's the lazy boy review.
This is what you get when you have me record a podcast at 7 o'clock at night after I worked a full day. So 9 out of 10. I loved it.
9 what out of 10? What?
9 points out of 10 points.
You're not going to be good at one of these unnecessary debate type things at Comic-Con after all. I decided.
I would be. But you told me those people got to prepare their answers. If I get a little bit of time to prepare, I'm gonna knock everybody's socks off. So
you
there.
Look like you need a piece of chocolate or something.
I had a long day. Give me a break.
You do look like you just came from a Comic-Con that you spent 4 days at. So I'll give you that. That's authentic. Jeff, what are you drinking there?
I have Lucky Buddha. It comes in a Buddha-shaped bottle.
Cool bottle.
It looks like one of the bottles of cologne my grandpa used to have sitting on his dresser.
It looks sort of like a bong.
No, it's a Buddha.
No, I believe you. I believe you. I've been watching you drink it. I don't think it's actually you drinking bong water.
No, and it's not Avon cologne either. Out of a 70s decanter.
Nice. Well, you guys are up on me because I'm drinking my Big K caffeine-free diet cola again.
Man, that's the only sponsor we're probably going to get for this podcast. You and your Big K cola.
I should ask Kroger if they want to sponsor us.
You traded one equal for another.
I told you I'm not drinking during the week.
We're very proud of you. You're doing a great job.
Yeah. Some days are easier than others.
I believe it.
But it helps to have comic books, and it helps to have good friends and good podcast co-hosts like
You should have been on the bronies panel. Friendship
is magic. So Jeff, you're gonna take us out with a little Crypt Keeper cheers.
Yes.
Hello, boys and ghouls, raise your glasses for a toast to
whatever. I lost it. Sorry.
That's amazing. Cheers.
And cheers, everyone. If you've got a comic you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter at Casual Comics Guy, at our blog, casualcomicsguy.com, or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, stay safe and stay frosty, people.
That's crazy you could just do that. I love it.